Welcome back to another episode of the Nerdcast. It's episode 23, and we're going to call it special just because Tyler's here, and we want to call it special, a special edition episode.
It's fine.
There you go. See, it's not going to be any fun anymore, and I think that's why he's taking that approach, so that way I'm just
it's
not...
So blasé. Yeah. It's so blasé now.
Yeah. Yeah. So episode 23, we've made it 23 episodes for this season. Pretty exciting so far.
When does the new season start?
I was going to ask you, when does that...
Because we had season one that went for... An indeterminate
20 episodes.
An indeterminate number of episodes.
It went to 20, and it got cut off just because of we lost our technical person at that time.
Okay. Then we didn't really have... I think we recorded two or three episodes of the missing season two that may or may not ever see the light of day.
No, we recorded
there was
probably...
like six.
No, we recorded like 8 or 10 times because we aired three or four of them. There's
right.
three or
there
four
There are some
of
them that are out there, right.
There's another, and I have a folder on my computer where all the audio is saved. It called the lost episodes, and
really?
Those episodes are those raw files. Are
so
saved
we decided.
In there.
I mean, I'm concerned. Maybe we just should not do seasons anymore and just start numbering them like 1 to 100.
Well, I don't know because we have some new artwork and some new all this imagery stuff that we're gonna launch season four with here soon. So
okay,
so but when is
I've
season
got a strategy.
Start?
I've got a strategy plan for it. And you guys are putting me on the spot on the
exactly.
air here. So
yeah, that's the only way we're gonna
feel like man, feel like this is something that needs to be talked about.
All right, yeah. All right. Some
and you can't just sit there. And, you can't
want to know.
We'll table that till post recording. But in the meantime, introduce your crew here. Of course, we do have Adam.
Hello.
We have Bob. Coming around full circle here, we have Tyler.
Hello.
Actually, we're not full circle yet, but that was about half circle.
I mean, yeah.
Myself, Iggy, and then back to Adam for full circle. Aaron is not joining us tonight.
Aww.
We got one episode of all five of us in this summer since Denver. It seems just crazy because we've still been putting convention coverage out. I'm still editing. And by the way, which I said, and I shared the picture online, I said, I was challenging, and it was these two guys specifically here, Bob and Tyler. I want so much audio from Denver Comic Con that I'm overwhelmed. And I am still posting interviews and still editing interviews.
Yeah. Right. Here we go, Charlie.
Later.
I talked to a lot of people.
So, so we do have we have two more interviews going up this week. The Stubby, the band.
Stubby Shillelaghs?
Yeah, Stubby Shillelaghs. Yes. And then a very funny interview. The guy was hilarious. Atom, the Amazing Zombie Killer.
Oh, so, Adam, that guy was awesome.
So... Adam might like that movie. Adam, yes. The Amazing Zombie Killer, he's a bowler, and he has to kill zombies, although the movie has no zombies in it.
Okay.
But he did say it has
a
lot
of bowling.
It has a lot of bowling, a lot of boobs, and a lot of booze.
Blood.
Oh, blood, that's right.
A lot of
dude.
Blood, a lot of boobs, a lot of bowling.
And so he said...
It's like, I mean, you meet the guy, and you get it, he's like... I mean, it's the quintessential B movie. Like,
exploitation.
The gore.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
over the top.
For Poltergeist. He did the gore stuff for Poltergeist. Him and his partner.
Poltergeist.
They did, yeah,
the original
Poltergeist.
Yeah.
Poltergeist.
Poltergeist.
The chicken one.
Right.
So you guys. I figured Adam.
It's a very underground sort of film.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say it's still.
Obviously.
I mean, it's been on Netflix and stuff.
It's a
too.
Thing. Yeah.
So they did the special effects for that, and it made him and his friend decide, hey, let's do our own movie, and this is what they came up with. We won't go into too much detail, though, because the interview does air this week, and Tyler does ask all those questions. So, Tyler asked those questions. So we got a few. We just had one today that actually Bob did go up, or this past Sunday, I guess is a better way to put it for when you guys are listening to this, was it Katrina Knights? Is that her name? The author for...
Yes.
She did Blood on the Ice. And
yes.
And it's a Chicago Blackhawks player who's then killed and
killed
turned
and
into
turned
a vampire.
A vampire and goes into
and
the
so he goes and
Vampire
plays,
Hockey League.
So he goes and plays for the Vampire Hockey League.
Awesome.
Is that like the zombie, Mutant Football League?
Yeah,
yeah
mutant football league.
Pretty
much. That video game. But
it's
I remember that. Do you remember the cartoon? Like, I've asked
yes.
people this, and not many
yeah.
people remember
yeah.
the cartoon. The cartoon was awesome.
It didn't. It wasn't that much of it.
Oh, it aired for all of like a half a season
yeah.
or something like that. But it was fantastic.
So the other big thing this weekend, too, of course, was the release, this past weekend's release of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm. Woohoo!
So, Bob...
It was good. It was good.
I knew Bob had to see it.
Yeah. It's getting fantastic reviews.
Yeah,
it really
reviews
is.
Are phenomenal.
The reviews are really good. It's very different from the original, from the first or Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And I tell you, Andy Serkis, if he doesn't get some award for this movie,
he keeps getting in the speech of it, and then he's been nominated now for a Best Supporting Actor for this, for his performances in that aren't. I guess what you would say traditional
motion,
right.
Motion capture.
Yeah, motion capture.
Well, I mean, he's definitely brought it to a point where it's.
I mean, it is.
Well,
I
the
mean,
technology's caught up to it to where it's not just a guy in a suit that we're getting basic motion from anymore. I mean, those are his facial expressions.
It is. Yeah. He is right. a full blown character with dialogue. I mean, it's an amazing performance. It really is.
So, the other thing too that I've been hearing a lot of praise from on this is the post apocalyptic San Francisco that they paint, like the scenes, the special effects of how they've set up San Francisco, the sets, everything like that is supposed to be
phenomenal.
Unbelievable.
Looks phenomenal.
And I've seen articles and you talk about reviews coming out. I've seen statements specifically just about that, of how amazing that's been set up.
You know, you get that stereotypical scene where you go over the hill and you go down the hill toward Fisherman's Wharf.
Mm-hmm.
You get that same shot here, but it's just totally, you know, ravaged with, you know, plants, the buildings are destroyed and everything. It just looks
what's
amazing.
the timeline on this one? Was it 5 years after?
I believe it was 10 years. I think 10
years?
10 years
something like that. And, of course, as we talked about last week, prepping for it, Gary Oldman. And
Gary
you never downgrade when you add Gary Oldman.
Never.
You know,
no.
So that's pretty exciting. Money, have you seen numbers? What was
I believe it did. It's obviously number one at the box office. I think it did like $63 million.
Okay.
Which...
A little bit shy of what I think was they were projecting, though.
No, actually, I think it's $73
million. Okay.
They were actually thinking it was going to be about 50, 60. So it's actually did better.
Well, I think our guy, Ben, did a great job because he was projecting 70.
And then
so
there's...
that's pretty close.
That'd be pretty close.
And then Transformers is...
73.
Yeah.
According to Box Office Mojo.
All right.
So...
All right.
Yeah, and how many did Transformers get?
16.5.
Yeah.
Still?
There's your dip, finally. A little bit.
Well, that's another... 50% off, 50% from last week.
But unfortunately...
Only 65% what's 50% off from the week
That's
before.
Like when you go shopping on those super clearances deals. What's 50% off of 60%?
The upsetting thing, I think the only thing that upsets me about Transformers is...
That it's still in theaters?
People are still...
That Michael Bay is still making it?
About 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, finally, after however long it had been out, Days of Future Past had become... the highest grossing movie of 2014.
Right.
Right.
At like worldwide, like 730 million or something like that.
Right.
As of last week, Transformers 4 has now passed it as the highest grossing movie of 2014. Yeah. Worldwide.
People will see, will sit there and watch a train wreck.
That was funny because I ran into, he's helped us, the name has probably popped up a few times in previous episodes, but he's also helped us on our convention tour, Kanan. We ran into him at the grocery store the other night. And
I guess he loved it.
Well, no, but it was funny. It's funny that we were talking about some of the movies. It was yesterday because I was saying I'm going to watch Wish I Was Here. And he goes, oh, I saw the trailer that I can't remember if it was before Transformers or before something else he said. And I said, you saw Transformers? He goes, and he just kind of looked around and goes, I don't know.
Is he the one who still to this day like claims that Transformers 2 is a really good movie?
No.
I feel
like
there's someone that we know that I've gotten an argument with.
They wouldn't be in our what we'd consider our quote group, a clique or whatever, if they still did that.
I don't know.
We would have made them pack
their we're still friends with Kanan.
We're still are we? Kanan's problem isn't terrible taste in movies, is that he hasn't seen 90% of the movies that are out there. So,
he has nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I feel like if somebody was still sitting around here talking about that, I would get upset with them. And speaking of, I so wish Aaron was on this because I did want to cover something that her and I have been arguing this weekend, but we'll have to save it for another time. It does involve Stanley Kubrick and her favorite director, Wes Anderson. So I'll let you guys stew on that one.
You can't drop that. I can think about the whole episode.
You know exactly what she's thinking. She said Wes Anderson is in the same league of Stanley Kubrick.
No.
And I told her anybody that we know, actually I said anybody that knows movies at all that comes over here will argue against you. I said it's one thing.
And that's not even anything against, I love Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever made anything that I didn't think was phenomenal. But he didn't make 2001.
He didn't
make The Shining.
My argument was not only is he not gone and not crossed into other genres, he has like one genre that he does.
His own genre.
And he does it the same way every time.
Right. But not even that. It's Stanley Kubrick's not only done all these different genres, which not a lot of directors that get that popular do, because they usually stick in what they're comfortable with. But so not as the only done all those. He set the bar in all of those too. Like he set the bar for sci-fi for so long. He set the bar for horror movies for so long. He set the bar for, I mean, for the
for epic satire. Yeah. I mean, so like, let's take off everything that Stanley Kubrick's ever made. So you get to pick one Stanley Kubrick movie, and you get to put it up against
everything.
I feel
like Tyler needs to listen to our recent movie night.
Yeah,
that just aired this past Thursday.
I started listening to it, but I did. I had got to work, and I didn't have time to finish it. So you get to only get to pick one Stanley Kubrick movie and put it up against every single movie as a whole that Wes Anderson made. And I love Wes Anderson. And I even, like, my favorite's even, like, Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. So, like, I don't even go for, like, the really popular one. I love Wes Anderson. Nothing he's done, if you were to put all those into one giant movie, all the great parts of everything Wes Anderson made, it doesn't even touch Dr. Strangelove.
No.
Like, it doesn't even come close.
Agreed.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is, and gosh, I feel like we're going off on this again, but if you, well, what's the best war movie out there? All right, Full Metal Jacket's probably in that conversation at least a little bit. What's the best sci-fi movie out there? Okay, 2001's probably in that conversation a little bit. What's the best horror movie out there? The Shining's probably at least in that conversation. These are movies that are
probably.
All,
what's the best? What's the best movie about illicit sex clubs out there? Probably not Wise White Shot.
But whatever, I mean, that's the thing. Whatever genre you're talking about, he's getting brought up because he's done that movie, and he not only did that movie, he did it really well. So where the people who make your favorite movies in that genre talk about having seen Stanley Kubrick's movies and being like, "Yeah, I want to make that movie."
So with that all, as I was mentioning, I was talking to Kanan about it. It was a big thing was saying I get to watch Wish I Was Here. So besides Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Wish I Was Here was available to Kickstarter backers and certain press this past weekend for them to do a screening. You got it for one day only. You had to click on the specific link they sent you. You could only watch it once. Once you started it, you had 3 hours to finish it, and the entire movie was watermarked with a unique code. Unique code.
Wow.
So that way, if you made the copy of it, it wasn't just, this is a whatever screener or this is provided for whoever. It was your unique code. So that way, they would track you down if you were out putting it on the Kickstarter.
I'm assuming it's still on Pirate Bay, like right now.
Yeah, probably. Wow. Probably. Anyways, so we almost started talking about it before we started recording. Really, really enjoyed it. It's it was different.
Now, to be fair, can you stand away from your Zach Braff
love affair,
crush, man crush?
So
love everything he's ever done.
And be honest, that almost made me start to dislike it at the beginning because it was such a different Zach Braff than what you've seen from Garden State, which is even so far different from what you see from Scrubs. You're so used to watching season 1 through 8 of Scrubs, which I would consider the complete series.
You're so used to watching it because
I'm so used to it, and Tyler's somewhat used to it.
Somewhat.
Watching this, well, I don't think you go into those later seasons as much as I do. So
after season 5-ish,
five's the peak, I would say.
But I feel like Iggy cycles through them every 2 months.
I do.
I walk in the house and it's always on.
The problem, he cycles through them. The problem is when they were still being aired, I watched and rewatched seasons 1 through 4, 1 through 5 in the every day. Like, that's what I would do.
Yeah, that's what I would do then, and I still do it on Netflix, and I own them all. Season 9, of course, not counted for. Anyways, so Zach, I am a big fan of him.
Yes.
And you can see earlier on, Zach Braff didn't have as much influence, and then the tone of certain things changed. The way they handle certain topics changes in Scrubs towards the end. The way the music even comes out, Zach Braff gets a lot more pull in what's happening. And you see that in Garden State, completely his idea. And that's why he did this movie through Kickstarter, because he wanted complete control. He wanted control of that music. He wanted to film in L.A. When the studio he approached wanted to send him to Vancouver. He wanted to do all this, and he wasn't able to do it, so he raised the money. And to be honest, that was probably the best thing for the movie. Because all that controversy also put that movie
put in the consciousness.
Yeah, everybody is aware of this. So we watched it. It started slow. It wasn't slow. I mean, it's that type of drama. It's not an action packed. Aaron did a great job of her explanation was, these are not the types of movies you see in theaters anymore. Like, they don't send these movies to many theaters. These are the ones that get the limited releases and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because as we're talking Transformers being the number one movie this year, it's nothing like that. So it definitely is very different than Scrubs, than Garden State.
Okay.
Even in Last Kiss, and
that's the Rachel Bilson one, right?
Yes. And I didn't know how I was feeling about it at first, but there is a turning point in the movie. There is a conversation that happens that, like, Aaron's like, can we just record that part? Like, just, we need to write that down word for word. It was the most amazing thing, and it just made me realize how incredible and deep that movie really was. And it's it, and you realize it towards the end, too, because it's dealing, the whole time it's dealing with the topic of death. And it's not robots blowing shit up, or it's not the news exploiting it to just show bodies and everything like this. It was actually, like, really dealing with death. And, like, you
very
felt
intimate.
Yeah, you felt really a part of that. And it was incredible how it was captured and how it pulled you in. And it did everything it was supposed to do. So the best way for me to put it was nothing I expected, but it was everything I needed it and wanted it to be. And I brought up right before we started this too, kind of dealing with some things in my life right now personally that are around that whole topic as well. So it was just a powerful movie to me. And the more I think about it, I think the more I actually appreciate it even. And another fantastic soundtrack, of course, because Zach Braff is fantastic.
He does
music.
Enjoy his music, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he had new song from the Coldplay, new song from Coldplay, new song from the Shins, like three other bands that wrote brand new song just for this soundtrack.
Those are on the soundtrack only. It's not going to be like a song that they have that's coming
out
on an album.
Yeah, they wrote, there was, I think, five or six tracks from different bands wrote specifically for this soundtrack. So
there are a lot of bands that I'm mm-hmm. a big fan of that I'm a fan of because they featured on Scrubs in the first
Scrubs
season,
or the
like,
I mean the Garden State soundtrack as well, like like double platinum or something like that.
Well, that and it has such a wide range of music, but it all fits together really well.
That's the same way this
any album that has two Shin songs, something by the Thievery Corporation, and Simon and Garfunkel is like,
well, there's
figure something out.
There's certain movies that I love so much more than I probably should. I'll be honest and say that if you really look back at it, there's certain movies that I love even more than I probably should, and it's because the soundtrack persuades me.
Name them.
Zach Braff does a fantastic job of making that soundtrack. If the music can influence the movie so much, like, to me, that just it makes it that much more powerful.
Yeah.
Name them. I absolutely love, well, Empire Records is one of my all-time favorites, and the music is such an influence on that. There was, I can't even think off the top of my head, there's just soundtracks that I own that, like, I love this movie. I'd have to go look over there.
Singles is High Fidelity. It's a good movie.
High Fidelity, even without a soundtrack,
right? But that soundtrack,
I know. But no, Singles has a nostalgic place in my heart, and that period of time is captured so well. It's not a great film, but God, the music is so good.
Would it be anything by Cameron Crowe?
Yeah,
I would say too.
Jerry
like,
Maguire, yeah.
Across
yeah.
the Universe, like. I mean, it's a good movie, but I love that soundtrack, the Beatles music on there, too.
But without the soundtrack, you wouldn't have the movie.
That's true, without the soundtrack.
Yeah, so you can't really, you know.
I don't know, but they do a fantastic job with some of the music on there. There's something, I don't know why my mind's blanking right now, but there's something I have on the shelf that I went and bought the soundtrack, and my wife still...
Watchmen.
Knows, well, I do love that soundtrack, by the way, but she still teases me about it. No, I can't think of it. I think one I did realize, too, that I probably like more because of it is Sucker Punch, even influenced. Zack Snyder does a great job with music in his movies as well. No Zach Braff, but anyways.
You know who I think really is really good at that is Robert Rodriguez. Because he does all the composing.
Well, any Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
I mean.
Well, he manages to make songs that no one's heard or hasn't listened to in 30 years, like... shoot up the charts.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Like, I mean, Pulp Fiction took songs that people hadn't, didn't know existed and made them, like...
There's the soundtrack bestsellers. Right there that, you know...
Yeah, Pulp Fiction is the soundtrack.
I'm excited for the Guardians of the Galaxy one, by the way, which Bob did.
The new one with Cherry Bomb in it, it's fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, Wish I Was
so
Here.
So, better than
movie.
Garden State.
It's hard. It's different than Garden State. It's one of those things, it's like, you love both those children the same. You can't, you know, they have their values.
So, what was the best part of Wish You Were Here, and why was it Mandy Patinkin?
Wow, I heard that question before. Oh,
See, I don't, the best part, actually...
I will also accept Josh Gad.
I don't, see, it was so hard because... I don't know.
Such a good ensemble cast.
It was
cast.
It really was. The cast in it was incredibly impressive, and so many people did these small roles that are people that you recognize. A lot of Scrubs alum in there, first of all. But there's so many small roles. Chocolate Bear, of course, shows up, but Donald Faison.
He's in some of the trailers,
He's a car dealer. and there's a great scene with him, and it's the whole time, and as they walk up and start talking, Aaron's even sitting there going, I don't believe they don't know each other. And there's involved, and you can't, because you can immediately, it's like, they can't even fight back the grins anymore when they see each other. It's like, but there's even that moment, there's a lot of hospital involvement, because as I mentioned, it does deal with the subject of death, and Aaron was even like, why didn't they just put him in some green scrubs and put him in the hospital? that's where Donald Faison should have came in. I was like, okay. But I still think there's a turning point in the movie, the best part, in his children. He has two children. They go to Jewish school because his dad's, like, hardcore traditional Jewish, too. So, like, totally, like, the clothing, the women sitting, the girls are sitting, you know, behind the wall, the screen, when they're in for the worship and everything. Like, crazy traditional. And Zach Braff's character is not into it at all. And there's the point when he's dealing with the subject of his dad, and he goes and talks to one of the rabbis there, and it's just the explanation. He tells him a story about, and it won't be a big spoiler, so I'll kind of go into it a little bit, because they've shared a lot in the trailer where he's kind of like that spaceman with the little mechanical robot he has. And he goes in the store and he says, as a kid, me and my brother, that's all we did. We thought we were these people. We were the ones who saved the world and everything like that. And did that. He goes, I hadn't thought about that for over 15 years. And he goes, now every time I drift off or I close my eyes or whatever, that's the forefront. And he goes, you know, tell me how this and that and all that links and where God's hand is in it. And he goes, if you tell me God works in mysterious ways, I swear I'll beeline out of here. And then the rabbi gives him an explanation that I seriously, like, I jumped off the couch and I said, this is what faith is all about. This is what life is all about. And I said, if people who believe in a God, in a higher power, would just say something like that to people who don't, like, all of this drama that we have in this world would just go away. And it was a perfect statement. And it was nothing that swayed you. Like I said, it was a Jewish thing and I'm not Jewish. So it's nothing that sways you one way or another, but it kind of put in, it was, how do you explain life and death and faith and all that in just one statement? And they kind of did it right there in that movie. So it was pretty incredible. But anyways,
did he write the screenplay?
Yeah. Him and his brother wrote they wrote the movie, and then he directed it and of course starred in it. And, gosh, I would think of her name right now. What's her name? Goldie Hawn's daughter.
Oh, she's in, like, your favorite movie of all time.
Kate Hudson.
Kate Hudson, thank you. Plays his wife. The kids, the little boy is hilarious in the movie. And they open it up with, Zach Braff just drops a loud swear. And he's like, well, you're not a, or he goes, he said, you said fuck, and fuck means sex. So you want to have sex with the swear jar? Because he said, fuck the swear jar. And he goes, so you want to have sex with the swear jar? He goes, so the kid's like, because he's so analytical and literal about everything, it's pretty funny. So well done. I'll get a review up this week, but I was really pleased with it. I'll just put it that way. But I think it's something, obviously it won't have huge success in the box office. His fans will go see it.
When's the release?
This coming weekend. So this weekend when this airs is the release.
Wide release, limited release.
It's a wide release, but I'm sure it won't be as many theaters.
We won't see it probably in Manhattan, Kansas.
That's for sure. So and then it's supposed to, I'm pretty sure he's already got the plans worked out with Focus on I think it's September or October sometimes for the home release and home video and everything. So it's going to be a pretty quick turnaround, which makes sense because, like you said, with the Kickstarter thing, there's been so much buzz now for this long. People are ready to get their hands on it already. Yeah. So they're going to have to move it through that cycle pretty quickly. But big thing number three this weekend, World Cup finale. So
I know we
don't concentrate too much on sports here. I know that's not something that's always associated with
culture. I mean, this is
going to
be the third podcast in a row.
I was just about to reference that.
And I was thinking about it on the way over because I was like, well, we'll probably talk about the finale today because, you know, Germany won, beat Argentina. We'll talk about it. And I was like, that's three episodes in a row.
Spoiler alert.
We got it.
Epiphany that I had on the way home.
Okay.
We've talked about the World Cup 3 weeks in a row. And what
it's
event,
a hat trick, by the way.
What event has happened during those 3 weeks that we did not talk about at all? Like, didn't even mention.
What are we missing? 4th of July weekend.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of un-American of us. Talked about soccer for the World Cup for 3 weeks straight.
Depending on who you listen to on the interwebs, if you talk about soccer at all, you're un-American.
This is true.
So Germany in...
Germany-Argentina.
Yeah.
Really good game.
Really
good game. They did, so many times the final can be very pretty much a letdown from the tournament. Everybody's fighting so hard to get to the final, and you get to the final and you don't want to screw up.
And one team just runs out of gas or does something.
You look at someone like a Brazil and mix in the the war of atrophy that is the month of the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like
the
number of players have gone down with injuries.
Players who drop off. So Argentina was without Di Maria. And so, I mean, there were players out and stuff like that. And Germany, in the warm-up, one of their star midfielders gets hurt, and so they bring in a sub, and he gets concussed in like the 20th minute, so he's out in like the 30th minute, and you're like, holy cow. So like, it's pretty crazy, but
it's an intense world out there in that soccer field.
I mean, guy got a shoulder to the cheekbone.
No, I wasn't being sarcastic at all. It's crazy.
It is a serious game. So they played back and forth. It was nice and wide open. It wasn't very cagey, so there's a lot of action. 0-0, which people obviously have issues with, and it went to overtime. Exciting overtime, lots of chances. That was the thing that I really liked, is that they were out there, no one was playing for a draw. They were trying to win, and that's what you like to see.
You don't want to get in from the team's perspective for the final game. You don't want to go to penalty kicks.
Because that's too much up in the air.
Yeah, right? that's just
Stanley Cup Finals going to penalty shots.
That's the one thing I love about the NHL is that once you get to the playoffs, screw the whole shootout thing. Yeah. We're playing overtime until somebody wins
overtime. I don't remember who someone described it like. Penalty shots have as much relationship to the ability of two teams to play hockey as one thing that doesn't have a lot to do with some other thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's you got to have some strategy there. The same with penalty kicks, but you could just as easily. I mean, your star player can just, especially with the stress, or just tips it just barely wrong, and it just hits the post or goes wide, or just that fraction of a mistake can change the outcome.
Well, there were so many
entire tournament.
Germany had that header that went right off the post towards the end.
Off the post. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. And then I was really impressed with the class of the goal.
Oh yeah!
To take a ball
off
on
the chest
and
then volley
turn
it.
And straight volley right past the goalie. I mean,
it was dirty
from not very far. He didn't have a lot of room to work with, and it was really, really nice. And to see that kind of a goal that late into a game in a final of a World Cup. I mean, that's really
was fun because you definitely saw like who was in control. Change like if you'd watched only the first half, you thought Argentina was going to win that in a walk.
Yeah,
just the number of shots they had, how aggressive they were, how dangerous they were, but. I don't know if it was an exhaustion thing, injury thing, atrophy thing, but
Germany
was on over. And Germany also has my favorite player in the World Cup, just for one, watching him play, but number two, he has the most fantastically German name ever, Schweinsteiger.
Yeah.
Gotta love that guy.
First name's Bastian, by the way.
Bastian Schweinsteiger. That guy wins. I've also never seen anyone so sad to get the golden ball ever.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
To be fair, we all knew, by the way, you're the best soccer player in the entire world. Here's your golden ball, but sorry for losing.
Yeah, you didn't win. But the other thing, too, is I think bring it back, and we brought it up last week after Brazil got pounded by Germany. Sure does make that Germany-USA game look a lot better, too.
Yeah, that 1-0 USA loss.
Now that Germany is the World Cup champion, that 1-0 game.
Not that anyone is. I'm curious to see what kind of analytics they're able to pull up tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be something on Deadspin about it. But, as if we weren't already aware that there's a lot of people who say things that we may find offensive or you obviously didn't think that through on social media, specifically Twitter. Yeah. If you follow trending topics on Twitter or uses of certain words during certain events, you're like, who are these people? And they did some analytics during some of Germany's matches throughout the World Cup and during the U.S.-Germany match. The number of uses of the word Nazi on Twitter spiked to a degree that you cannot even describe. The graph of it is insane.
Did they let it stay on the trending side?
I don't know if it even made it to trending, but people, you can do all the analytics. How many times is this word used on this website, whatever. And then during the Brazil game, the number of uses on Twitter of the word Holocaust has never been higher.
I do want to point out.
But then you mix in the fact that there's a certain, I don't know what the word I want to use for it is, there's a certain understood but downplayed relationship between Nazi Germany and Argentina that a lot of people don't like to go into.
Right.
I'm really curious what kind of fun trends people are able to find after.
I do want to point out, too, that it wasn't the final game. It goes back to the Brazil-Germany game. But this past week, it was a Pornhub had to issue a statement out.
People to stop
uploading a porn.
The Brazil.
Or clips from the Brazil-Germany game. and saying, titling it, "Young Brazilians Get Fucked by the Entire German Soccer Team." So, anyways, so we'll move off the soccer and move off the swear words as well. I think we've gone by fast three. Hopefully Apple doesn't listen to this episode when they're putting them up there, because this definitely.
I don't even think I've used one yet.
I've used them all.
This guy on the call.
What the hell? Piggy?
Anyways, so. We didn't. One thing we promised to do this time, which we didn't do, and I'll take ownership for it because I guess I take ownership for everything on here. We're supposed to ask our listeners some questions, or ask them to ask us some questions.
Did we not get any questions?
I didn't ask. So I tapped some private sources for some questions.
Ooh. You tapped them.
You need to find a better way to phrase that.
I need to.
Phrasing.
Yeah. Okay. I talked to some people through non-social media, some people that I know personally, to give us some questions. Ask, and the first question will be a dead giveaway of my source, but what is your favorite Ninja Turtle?
I've had this discussion so many times. As someone who grew up on the Turtles, it changes as you get older,
right? I was teaching my daughter, we're still working out the names of them. Mm-hmm. So who's the names, and mainly because those names are a little bit harder for us to say, so we're working on the abbreviated names for her to be able to associate with the colors, so it's easier for her. So we had to have the discussion of what's your favorite Ninja Turtle as we watched the animated movie today, which I still think is so underrated. It's such a good movie.
I have a whole take on this. It's not surprisingly.
All right, go for it.
But before we ask, is there anyone in the room whose favorite isn't Raphael at this point in your life?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's yours?
I don't know. It depends on my mood at the time.
All right, Adam?
Donatello.
It's okay.
Michelangelo.
All right.
See, if I'm going to lead towards Donatello with Adam, though, but I think there's been phases in my life where each one is my
favorite.
So, and
that's why I was explaining this to someone. Me and a friend were talking about this. When I was a kid, when I was much younger, you start out, it's when you first find out about the Ninja Turtles. No, it's Leonardo. He's a leader, and he's got swords. Like, and swords are the best. Like, that's when you're really little. Like, I want the guy, I want to, because we played in the backyard, you got to pretend you always wanted to be the kid who got to be Leonardo, because you got to have swords. And then you get
and
a
you
little
got to
bit,
tell everybody what to do.
You get a little bit older, and then you either go the Donatello or the Michelangelo route. I feel like I went Donatello young because I was obviously a young, nerdy kid, and he made all the cool gadgets and the van. And the bow staff's a pretty sweet weapon. You get to twirl it around in your hands. So you can make one easy. You get a broomstick.
Right,
you go get a stick in the yard.
Take the broom off the...
Nunchucks are harder. I was going to say, I'll point out that too, is everybody wants the nunchucks, but once you get your first experience with trying it,
and you smack yourself somewhere.
One of my best friends as a kid, name was Aaron, took karate classes and had size and nunchucks at home, so we would get to use those sometimes and not hurt each other.
I feel like there's that whole
South Park nunchucks will mess you up.
Yeah.
Like, if you think you hit your funny bone before, no, you haven't hit your funny bone before, so you use nunchucks. And then you usually, sometimes you stay on that one, or you switch back. I switched to Michelangelo a little bit later, because he's the cool, he's the party dude, and you get
a
little
fun
older.
One, right?
I want to be the party guy. And then you get old and a little bit more jaded and world weary, and you realize, oh, no, it's Raphael.
Okay. Obviously. So I can relate to that some, but I think I started with the Michelangelo just because I never wanted
to be in charge. I wanted to have more fun.
No, I just wanted to be the party.
It's not about being in charge. It's about having katanas. Two of them.
I know. I wanted
on
to
your
be,
back and an X is so cool.
I wanted to be the party dude. Yeah. And I think at some point where I got my hand on some nunchucks, that's when I learned.
I love that you used the phrase straight from the theme song Party Dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So... so that, and then I think I went to Leonardo from there, and then Donatello was probably the longest one and probably still there, but I think Raphael has worked his way in there, and there'll be periods depending on what day you ask me. It's like one of those things, like, what's your favorite movie? I have that one that I'm probably going to use as the one I usually go to, because that is overall, but honestly, today it could be something completely
different.
It
doesn't also hurt that in all the movies and in most of the shows, I feel like Raphael gets the best writing.
Yeah.
Like, he has all the best lines. He has all the best, like...
well, because he gives the attitude.
He has the attitude.
He goes off.
But he
He's
also
the one
has,
who connects with the other people,
he
too.
He has a personality, but he also has, like... He has, like, viewpoints and takes on things and gets an argument and stuff. Like, Donatello, you know, occasionally gets a crack in or something, but he's the nerdy, smart guy who just gets upset because they broke his toys or are not being serious. Leonardo's too busy being leader man, and Michelangelo... gets to throw out his cowabungas every now and then and make some crack and order pizza. But Raphael actually gets to say things, which is fun, too.
Yeah. It slices. It dices. All right. So,
peanut butter and French fries.
I don't know. So, Bob, you said...
I said Michelangelo.
Is your favorite still? Mm-hmm. So Bob's just never grown up.
I've never grown up.
I think we all knew that already.
I knew that one. So, okay. So that was the question. Source, children. Okay, that was the only question I really got.
That's what you got? Good
That's all you brought to the table?
I didn't put it out there. So I thought up of another one or two earlier before we started recording, and I've dropped them already, but the source would have been me, I guess. So I don't know.
I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this that doesn't end up going into, like, the longest, like, ridiculous argument ever. But I got an argument today with one of my employees because we were talking. I don't even know how we got on the subject. I know exactly.
I'm ready to hit the stop button. Don't worry.
Okay. So I know how we got on the subject. So I don't know if you heard about the movie when he was promoting it, but do you know who John DiMaggio is?
Yes.
Does the voice of like Bender mm-hmm. and Jake on Adventure Time and stuff like that. Made a movie recently, a documentary called I Know That Voice, where mm-hmm. he basically goes around and interviews hundreds of voice actors, like all of his peers and stuff. Everyone from Billy West to, who else has he talked to? Billy West, Tara Strong, a lot of people from The Simpsons, like Hank Azaria and stuff like that. I mean, he talks mm-hmm. to a ton of people. Like if someone's done a voice, even and Nolan North, so like a lot of video game people, like anyone who's done a voice that you know, like he talks to this person. And it's really fun. And it came out a while ago. It just recently came to like Amazon Prime Instant Stream and stuff like that. So I watched it last night and I was talking about that movie at work and talking about some of the people in the interview. And like they talked to Mark Hamill and I was explaining to one of my employees, he's like, he's the Joker. And he's like, what? And I started explaining to one of my employees, like, no, he's the Joker. Like you think of the Joker, he's, you know, on the cartoons, all the video games, stuff like that. And he didn't really, first of all, he didn't know that it was Mark Hamill. Number two, never has really seen any of the cartoons like Justice League.
So he's a younger guy.
No, he's like the same age as I am.
Really?
But
really?
He grew up like really sheltered, didn't see a lot of TV shows, stuff like that. And like hasn't seen.
Wait. I don't care how sheltered you are.
I realize that. But he's only seen like.
Did you fire him?
No, he's only seen one.
No, he needs to keep working at Best Buy so he can get the discount on all the seasons.
He's seen one and a half. He's seen like one and a half of the Nolan Batmans, and I think has only seen.
Somebody not this
no like
hold
so,
on
like,
though before you get into this because somebody this that has this lack of involvement of Batman in his life like
he's not working in the Geek
he's,
Squad
he's gonna end up in prison because Batman is like your guiding light.
That's what you see that's right. How you can see where this is going so like,
okay
has had very little exposure to
so
the mother effing
he's
Batman.
A crappy
like,
right
he's a crappy
I can't say what I want to say because like, he's already used,
I
them
used
all
the F-bombs.
But the mother effing Batman, he's the Batman and I was like how do you not he's like well I just don't and then this is where it took
Uh-oh.
A turn for the worst
Uh-oh.
Is he makes some bold claims
oh,
about
no.
how
no
oh no
Batman
oh.
is just a crappy version of Iron Man.
I want to point out, and then things got real.
Hold on. Before you even go any further with this, I want to point out that Tyler is even bothered by this
Was
statement.
Was this Kanan?
And Tyler is 100% Marvel over DC, and he's still
There's
bothered by this
statement.
There's
a difference between
I know,
being Marvel and DC.
That's
and
my point, though, is that
he's the goddamn
dropping
Batman.
Deuces
that's
on Batman,
point.
Right.
That's
oh
my
gosh.
Point, is that even
so,
Marvel
then,
fanboys
So then I,
are.
Then I was like, I got a little upset. I was like, that's nonsense.
Leave my
stop
precinct
saying,
right now.
Stop saying stupid things. And started getting into, and I was like, first of all, you've seen two and a half Batman movies.
Him.
You can't make claims like this.
Right.
He's like, well, I was like, first of all, Batman's like 75 years old. Like, you know, Iron Man came way later. He's not the poor man's, you know, whatever. Got into it, and then I resorted to like going on YouTube and pulling up clips from like Batman the Animated Series.
This is your job today.
Batman the Animated Series and Justice League, showing like, no, this is why Batman's awesome because he's. And then he starts trying to make claims like he's not the world's greatest detective. He doesn't do anything. Like, no, he does. He's smarter than Tony Stark. It got really ugly, I got to say. And he still didn't yield the point just because he doesn't know. He lived a life bereft of the bat. And it's I feel for him. I really do.
When we finish this, I'm going to need you to write down his name for me. So if I ever go in there and he approaches me, I'm going to be like, no, I need to talk to somebody else.
I need someone who knows what they're talking about.
No, I know what I'm talking
you
about.
Obviously
no,
have no,
you haven't
no,
even
you
seen any
not.
Batman movies.
It
so
got
you can just
really,
go away from
got,
me.
He hasn't seen a lot of movies. Like any time I make a movie reference at work, he just stares at me blankly and like no idea what's
you
going on.
You need to
like,
take us.
I've tried. I've tried.
Do a movie.
It's a mixture of like sheltered childhood, being in the military for a while, like missed out on some stuff. I feel bad for him, but I just don't know. I don't know how to reach him. I feel like it's too late.
How do I reach these kids?
He's a lost cause.
I got really upset about
it. As you said, look, you're gonna start with an A. Then you'll tell them at the end of the semester that it was much harder to keep an A than to earn one. Is what you'll do.
But then we went down the rabbit hole of like, I didn't realize. I mean, I knew because every now and then I'll remember some scene. I'll need to look it up. Just the sheer number of clip collections from specifically the Justice League, but all like the like Justice League Unlimited, like, and like, you know, Batman, obviously there's a lot of clips of Batman doing various awesome things throughout the animated series and, the cool things he's done in Justice League. And I'm showing him some of those clips and then like entire montages devoted to like the Question on the Justice League as played by what's his name? He was the Reanimator and Jeffrey Combs. Is that his name?
I don't the voice actor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
His voice is very like if you hear you're like, oh, no, that's that guy.
OK.
There's and the Huntress and like the people really I mean, I liked the Justice League cartoon, too. But God, people really, really liked the Justice League cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could ever actually buy any episodes. I think I could probably piece together the entire run of just both shows.
By the clips on YouTube.
Put my clips on YouTube.
OK.
There's some really fun ones, though. Like the one they did that movie between the end of Justice League and the start of Justice League Unlimited where the Thanagarians come and, like, basically take over Earth. I don't know if anyone remembers this. And they're trying to, like, go incognito and go undercover. And they're like, well, we have to... Well, how are we going to hide? It's like, no, we just put on regular clothes and we wouldn't be the Justice League anymore. And Wally and the Flash are like, guys, I don't know about you. I mean, I like you guys and all, but, like, the secret identity. And, like, Batman just stops him from talking and says, Wally West, Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne. And takes off his mask and the Flash is like, ah. Show off. It's fun.
That's like the you should have told him you know, the one thing you'll never hear Batman say is Superman, I need your help or whatever, something like that. Or Superman, help me. I don't know.
But then I end up just watching YouTube videos for a good chunk of my day, which is not real productive. Justice League was a good show.
So was he basing this all on the Iron Man movie?
I'm guessing it's based on...
He's going to have no... If he has no
Robert
knowledge
Downey
of the
Jr.
animated Batman series, he has no knowledge of any prior Iron Man then either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what he was basing it on. I mean, obviously I probably haven't read any comic books. I got really angry about it. And then he started talking about Batman not being a detective. He's like, when I think of a bat detective, you know, it's like Sherlock Holmes, but it can fight. But Sherlock Holmes can fight. I'm like, yeah, in Guy Ritchie movies. I feel like what it's come to is that he's just a really big Robert Downey Jr. fan,
right?
Is what I've decided now. Like after he said that about like a detective being Sherlock Holmes, but Sherlock Holmes can fight. But then
first of
like,
all, everybody can fight in a Guy Ritchie movie.
Well, obviously,
everybody can fight, but. That's the thing, though. Robert Downey Jr. did get two really good iconic characters. Really good direction too. I mean,
well, I'd say he made Iron Man iconic.
But also too, you're talking with a good script. They, you know, even at Iron Man 1, even though it was still Paramount at that time, you still had a very big influence from Marvel themselves,
right?
And then you had incredible direction. Mm-hmm. And then it's the same with Sherlock, the new Sherlock Holmes, is you have incredible direction, incredible script, and Robert Downey Jr. just owning those characters and giving that RDJ personality, I guess, is the way to say it. And it's nothing against his acting, but that's, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., if he was a superhero, he'd be Iron Man. I mean, that's...
He'd be Tony Stark. Yeah. You know, like, they picked the perfect, and that movie doesn't work, you know, without him, but he also made that movie. So.
Right, yeah.
No, for sure. And they're fantastic movies, so nothing against him finding those movies to be great and saying Iron Man's great and all that and people, but... you just can't compare him to Batman.
No one's better than the Batman.
No, that's for sure.
He's the goddamn Batman.
So, I don't know. We're going to be tripped up on that the rest of the night. Yeah. He said, I don't know. We're not, there's no argument. It's just a lot of us just grumpy.
The only like similarities between Tony Stark and Bruce Wayne stem from the fact that both of them have the same superpower. Which is lots of money.
Very rich.
Right. Which brings me to another meme where they're throwing the money at
each other.
And then like, Spider-Man comes like in and grabbing all the loose money. So that's another good one, though. I was going to say, another good thing, too, that came out that we had this past week was Deddy Cosplay revitalized the 10 section. So if you're not familiar, we've kind of had this ongoing, off-going article series called The 10, where we pick 10 of something, and that's what it's all about. So 10 best movies of whatever year, the 10 most anticipated movies, the 10 best actors or guy crushes, I think is what Jake did the one time.
Mm-hmm.
So Deddy Cosplay did the 10 sequels he wanted to see, And some good movies on that list or anything, but that made me think, too, of another question that we can get without asking our audience or ripping off one of our fellow podcasts is, right. What is that sequel? What's a sequel you're holding out for? What's some sequels you want to see? Maybe in something that's not greenlit, obviously, so something that you want out there that's not out there.
Wow.
A lot of thoughts, a lot of thinking going on. It's some on the list that I would like to see, too. There's always been the talk about a second Dr. Horrible sing-along.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that would be nice. Hellboy 3 would be awesome. And and we all know, the fact is we all know.
No one will pay for it.
Yeah. Del Toro's up for it.
Speaking of that, it's funny you bring that up. Like, just 2 days ago, Guillermo del Toro did an AMA on Reddit, and like the very first question is like, when are we gonna see Hellboy 3? And he's like, look, I really want to make this movie. He's like, I need this and this. He's like, but he's like, we've tried, no one wants to finance
Perlman
it.
Said, and he revised
he's like, no,
he shows up in the character just to go to the hospitals and talk to kids and stuff. Yeah. He's like, I would totally do a third movie. Del Toro's all for it. Del Toro's even putting together a script for a dark Justice League Dark. So,
that's gone so many different directions. He talked about it. He's like, look, we have an idea of what it's going to go about. Like, it's going to be Hellboy having to come to terms with the fact that his destiny is to be like the Beast of the Apocalypse, and him and Liz dealing with that. He has this whole thing. He's like, we've tried. He's like, because neither of them really made any money in the studio. I mean, in theaters, but they made tons of money on DVD and stuff like that. He's like, we've shopped it to just about everyone in town. No one will give us money to make this
here's
movie.
Here's the thing. I think you put a third one in theaters now, you'd see a rise in the box office numbers because...
Well, then everyone was like, just crowdfund it.
That's going to be a lot more than $3 million crowdfund.
Well, that's what they said. They said, just crowdfund it, it'll be fine. And then the next comment is like, have you looked up how much Hellboy 2 cost? The budget for Hellboy 2 was $80 million. Yeah. He's like, no one's crowdfunding that.
Go to China. Crowdfunded
from China.
That's how Transformers got a lot of their money, is they went to China. No. I mean, that's where most of their money is coming from, right? They're getting their money at
the box office. But
I want to make a low quality product coming from China joke there, but I got nothing.
All right. So what other?
I think that's the low hanging fruit.
What other? What other sequels would you like to see?
I'm waiting for part 3 to Kill Bill.
Okay.
I think. There's always talk about.
The last rumors I heard on it would be the daughter,
Verdita
from...
Green's daughter,
yes,
trying to hunt down the bride.
Exactly. Right. So that would make for an interesting movie. I'd like to see it.
I think that would be good.
We still never have gotten a stateside release of the whole Bloody Affair, with the extra scenes and everything either. So,
Quentin, if you're hearing us, please put that out.
If you're hearing us, please send us money.
Yes. Oh, that too. Or just shout out, just tell people to listen to it.
Hey, it's Quentin.
Okay, it's getting a little weird. Other sequels. So Bob says another Kill Bill.
I don't know. Sequels are tough for me. I'm not 100% sold on
sequels.
Movies needing sequels.
Yeah.
And in most cases, there are some worlds that I'd like to revisit. Like I'd like to see. I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, one of the things, I hit on this when with my review for the 300 Rise of an Empire, you know, for a sequel to be made, there has to be a definite reason. There has to be, the story has to be able to, I mean, it's not just where the story stops in one film and the studios are going for a money grab on the next.
I need you to have a better story-driven reason other than the original made a shit ton of money. Yeah.
Which is the number one reason.
Unless you had planned out a trilogy to begin with.
Peter Jackson and are able to convince people that they should pay for all three movies up front. Like,
right.
Well, at this point, he can do that from now on because he's...
Yeah, but the fact that he was able to do it the first time around, having made, like, The Frighteners and what was else that he had made before that?
Heavenly Creatures.
Yeah. Right. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, I give him that. A lot of them, the ones that John put on the list were ones that Hellboy 3 would have been. I'd like to see another Losers, to be honest.
I would watch another Losers.
I've never read past the first graphic novel. I'd read the first graphic novel, the one the movie's based off of.
I don't know where he came up with his idea that we need a sequel to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I don't know how I feel about that. I think John and I might have to have words
that
about
one,
that one.
That one I'm kind of, that's one that stands on its own, too. I agree
that's
with
one
you.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, and I don't need a sequel for it. A couple other ones on the list, I think he put Labyrinth on the list. I don't know if I need a sequel for that either.
Right, that's an interesting world to go back to. That's what I mean. Like I don't necessarily need a sequel. Give me another movie that happens there.
I mean, from what I understand, they're rebooting it anyway.
Are they?
Yeah.
Boo. Jim Henson.
And I get mad. I get mad about like remakes a lot of the times, but sometimes you think, you know what? I'm okay with this person, this vision, like going in.
I think David Bowie could still play that role.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally okay.
I'm not okay with that being remade, though. I like when you talk about certain movies that are back then. That you're like,
it's all going to be CGI like, probably now.
Remake, yeah. remake Logan's Run if you need to remake.
Well,
it.
There's one sequel.
Remake Logan's Run
You can't see the guy's neck in the robot suit. Right. Like remake it.
I would like to see someone, and it would be tough. And I don't even know if you could make the original, like if you were stay true to the story, make it into only one movie. All due respect to David Lynch, I would like to see a really good director with a giant budget go and make a faithful adaptation to Dune. I think that'd be amazing.
It's hard because and we've seen two different interpretations.
But that book is we've seen the movie. I mean, I've read the book. There's the movie. Then there's the miniseries that they did.
Yeah.
That was more true to it, but the production value obviously was
way down.
Was sci-fi original series, you know, like
right.
production
early
value,
sci-fi this, original series.
That's such a rich world to visit, and like there's all the, and like and I feel like as a studio you'd be on board with it because like there's all the books that Frank Herbert wrote plus all the. I mean, a lot
it's
of people want to.
For Herbert,
it's Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson together have written this huge, which the quality of which is not up to par with Frank Herbert, but who is
even the first book is a trilogy in and of itself. I mean,
yeah,
to
that's
do
the
that
thing.
Right,
that's
you've
saying,
got you've
to,
got
that
4 or 5 hours worth of movie
so,
just on its own.
It's so intricate and deep, and so much of the, what the dramas comes from, you know, weird political and religious weird things going on, and there is like three whole basic stories being told like in that thing,
right.
like beginning, middle and end. But I would like to see that one. I mean, the joke answer to this one is always because the title of the first one was a joke is like, when are we going to finally get to see History of the World Part 2?
Yeah.
I
yeah.
need that in my life, but
honestly,
anything
I
by Mel Brooks.
Sequel, to be
apparently like every interview I've ever heard of him do, especially recently, he says he still gets asked that all the time. And it's like, people don't understand that was the joke. Like,
I love the, somebody shared that on, cause there's an April Fool's article out there that it finally got greenlit. And somebody was sharing it. Like, I don't think it was this year, but the year before. And so I was pretty excited, but
well, and the thing is like sequels are all good and well if it, like he said, like it serves the story. There's a world that need, like a story that needs to continue to be told, but there's so much other stuff out there that we could be making movies about.
So same thought, different world. Probably not a sequel, but more of what old video games that you had that you played would you like to see on these new next gen systems, like either redone or revisited, I guess would be a way to put it.
Like we were going to see what video game, but I want to
make
a movie.
Because
I
got a lot of answers for that one.
Yeah. Now, Monster Football League. Like, do you want to see that on the new system?
Mutant Football League?
Yeah. Or Mutant Football League, excuse me.
Well, that's the problem is, like, because so many of them have to change fundamentally.
Like, I can't.
From what they used to be to what they could be now.
Yeah, you don't.
True.
You can't make a side scroller for the Xbox One. I don't think that's going to sell real well.
You can. It's just I mean, it's a waste of power. You could play 4 side scrollers with the power that the Xbox One has. I mean, so. For me, it would just be stuff on probably PS2,
all right,
original Xbox, and just getting them like fully graphically redone.
Yeah, I mean,
seeing the things that they've done with moving from the PS2 to the PS3. So when they redid the Metal Gear Solid games, and they look gorgeous. I thought at the time that playing it on my PS2, like. Graphics are never going to be better than this. This is ridiculous.
Well, even within the same console generation, seeing how much they're able to coax out of the hardware after they've had more time. Like, look at the difference.
When I'm playing
I'm
playing through the Dead Space games.
Like,
how much different
they get. Well, the one that really kills it, go to your PlayStation and put in Uncharted 1, then put in Uncharted 2, and then put in Uncharted 3. It's like, these were all made for the same system. Granted, one was at the very beginning of its life. One was pretty close to the end.
Right. You did the same thing with Assassin's
Creed. Yeah. Or watching the HD remasters they've done. Like, they did an HD remaster of Tomb Raider for PS4. And I was like, why are you remastering a game that just came out like this long ago? And then I saw the difference between the two, and it's uncanny.
You're like, wow.
And they're remastering Last of Us. It's going to come out here in a couple weeks.
Yeah,
and it's for the PS4.
That game was gorgeous. Yeah,
I can't even imagine.
Basically playing an animated movie.
And PlayStation does a lot of the HD remakes. They did it with Ico. They did it with Shadow of the Colossus. And they looked
really good.
You can't, I don't know, like, there's worlds and characters that I would always like to see redone, revisited, you know, new mechanics, new graphics, but you can't remake the same game again.
All right, well, what are those?
Well, that's easy. Zelda. Like, yeah, the new Zelda for Wii U looks insane. The stuff they showed at E3. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's been given short shrift a few times. Like, Other M was not good, but I want to see a really good Metroid game made on the next-gen console.
Yeah, that'd be good. Where's Earthworm Jim? Let's bring him back.
Oddworld?
Oddworld.
I feel like Earthworm Jim would just end up becoming a really odd, weird... It would become like a really surreal, like, FPS. Like, I don't know if you can still make it as, like, a third-person shooter. I feel like it would become this weird, like... first-person shooter with cows everywhere. I don't know.
Or how about, what was it, the because it was the Toe Jam and Earl, and you had round world that you had to go
around.
I'll
tell you one that I loved, I played so much, and I don't think I could ever beat it, was make a third-person Resident Evil-esque, but funnier, make a version of, is it Aliens Ate My Neighbors? Or Zombies Ate My Neighbors?
Zombies, I think,
The top-down, like, exploration game. Mm. That one was really fun. What other games I play a lot
I think
of?
There was a lot of games that when you talk about going to even go back to the PlayStation and the Nintendo 64, a lot of games that I'd love to see improved graphics. GoldenEye, I know they recently released on the Wii. When I say recently, a few years back, but seeing that, like, playing, could you imagine playing GoldenEye on a PS4 or Xbox One? Like, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
And they did a good job of, on those systems, there was PS3 and the Xbox 360 a lot of the multiplayer, which it sucked because there was not a lot of people that realized it, but the Quantum of Solace game, a lot of the multiplayer resembled what was from the GoldenEye game.
Right.
But they didn't really market that, or they didn't really anything, so not a lot of, there wasn't as many people on the online
and
servers.
That game was just, it was not
good. I don't think I ever finished the campaign part of it. I just played the
multiplayer.
You'd
buy it for the multiplayer, but, so I have a hard time dropping $60 for multiplayer.
If you liked GoldenEye, but you want the feel of GoldenEye, but with more stuff to do and more coolness, you just buy Perfect Dark.
Right. Perfect Dark was the jam.
I played that so much.
Yeah.
It's got a sniper rifle that shoots through walls with an X-ray scope on it.
Right.
It has a machine gun that turns into a turret.
Well, that was the one for the 64 that you had to buy.
You had to buy the little expansion pack that goes
into your system and upgrade your system.
Oh, so that game, and not a lot of people played it. Like, a lot of people didn't realize it was so, like,
really
they brought back levels from GoldenEye and put them in the game. Like, you could go and play, like, replay the facility or replay the temple and stuff like that. But all the weapons had these secondary modes on them.
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Bubsy.
That was a fun game.
There you go. Perfect. All right. So we are going to wrap up this week's episode. This week, I will have these guys make sure they do a better job reminding me. We will put some questions out there so we can answer some questions that
you
y'all
put
come
some
up with.
Questions out
we did some. We'll put a question out there to ask you to ask us questions. Is what I'm saying.
That's awkward.
Okay. That really is the phrasing.
We want your listeners' questions. We want listener questions. There we go. We'll just put it that way.
There we go.
Anyways, there will be a statement out there asking for you to ask us questions. All right. I'm trying to see how much I can complicate
it's
this,
awkward,
but anyway.
Hey, you're doing a great job.
Hey, guys, visit the website in the comments. Leave some questions for us. We'll answer them on the next episode.
There you go. Perfect.
Easy.
So this week, by the time this is aired, you'll see, like I said, the Wish I Was Here review up. One thing we didn't mention was not only Dawn of the Planet Apes, Bob, to see another movie that he'll have the theatrical review up, but the...
Life itself.
So the Roger Ebert movie. So, as that one there. So, some good reviews going up this week. Some great podcasts coming out before ours. We're even launching a new podcast this week.
Another one.
Yes, another one. So, stay tuned for that. But other than that, nothing, Tyler.
Nothing really.
All right.
We're good.
All right. Well, wow. Okay. Well, we'll wrap tidy here at the end then. So, signing out for the Nerdcast crew. We'll catch you next week.